Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Katrina Goldsaito and Julia Kuo, and listen closely in between the words for what is said in the ma, the silence. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 355 of the podcast with Katrina Goldsaito and Julia Kuo. The Sound of Silence is a book that invaded my subconscious in its evocative use of text and illustration to breathe life to sounds as well as to silence. Katrina's text calls attention and gives voice to the sounds of the koto player, to rustling bamboo, to distant radio, and to busy Tokyo streets. All the while, Julia's highly detailed illustrations give form to sound and set the stage for a tour of soundscapes and Yoshio's quest to find ma, silence. A few weeks ago, a fellow writer by the name of Anitra Rowe Schulte asked me what favorite picture book I can't get off my mind. After sharing The Sound of Silence with her, she wrote up a beautiful reflection on her reading experience, which I've linked in the show notes. I think her observations pair nicely with this conversation as well, and I love what she has to say about her children's reactions to the book. I hope you enjoy this conversation, and I hope, too, that you can find your own ma at some point in the days ahead. Here's episode number 355 of the podcast with Katrina Goldsaito and Julia Kuo. Welcome to the podcast, Katrina Goldsaito and Julia Kuo. I'm so excited that you're both here because you are the people behind The Sound of Silence, one of my favorite books.
Oh, thank you. We're so happy to be here.
Welcome. Hey, Katrina, why don't I give you a chance to say hi to the good people first and tell them who you are and what you do.
Sure. Hi, good people. I'm the author of The Sound of Silence, which, if you haven't read it, is a story about a little boy who is obsessed with sound, and he goes around Tokyo collecting all of his favorite sounds, and he hears this lovely new sound, which is the sound of a koto, which is kind of a Japanese harp, and it has this really mournful sound. And he meets the koto player and he asks her what her favorite sound is. And she says that her favorite sound is silence. And then he goes off through Tokyo on this search for silence and for this elusive sound. And it's my first picture book, so I'm really excited about that. And it's a story that's based on a story my dad told us growing up.
Oh, we're going to get back to your dad later and composers and everything. I am so intrigued. But first, Julia, would you like to make introductions?
Yeah, hello, I'm Julia. So I am an illustrator. I've been drawing for many different things for the past 8 to 10 years. like greeting cards and editorial things for newspapers and magazines, but I really love drawing for children's books. And I had the honor of illustrating for Katrina's story, which was especially nice because I felt like this story connected to me a little bit in the way I grew up and the things I'm interested in. So it felt especially personal as I was working on it.
I think your book is gorgeous. Beautiful. I hope you're hearing that from everyone. From the moment mm-hmm. Little Brown sent it to me, I have loved this book. And my good friend at All the Wonders, Mel, also is like my partner twin in being obsessed with this book. So to see the both of you come together and create this beautiful piece and to have it be so much about, well, as you said, Katrina, the obsession with sound, but mm-hmm. but also I found it to be when we're asked to listen for something, when Yoshio is looking, seeking the sound of silence, of that ma, right? Is it ma?
Mm-hmm. Ma, yeah.
That it seems like he is listening even more intently to everything mm-hmm. happening around him, not just enjoying all the sounds, but now listening to, I mean, to bring back an idea of a composer, almost listening to all of the separate instruments that make up the orchestra in that way. Mm-hmm. I really loved that notion that was carried throughout the story that way.
That's so lovely. It's so cool. I love hearing what people kind of take from the book. And can you hear the siren?
Oh, yeah.
There's a lovely, it's a San Francisco siren for you. Oh, yeah, here it comes. It sounds like it's coming into my office.
I hope it. Is everything okay, Katrina? Is there something you need to tell us?
I'm good.
Oh, wait, my kitchen is on fire. I'll be right back, guys.
Let's just continue the podcast. But that's such, it's so sweet. It's just really, you know, it's so meaningful to hear people also loving the book because you never really know what happens when it gets out in the world.
Well, it was being your first picture book, and I know from reading the note in the back that you're writing a YA, or perhaps you have finished writing your first YA, but from knowing this story from your father, which I'd love to invite you to tell, when did the idea come to you to try to then compose it as a picture book? I wonder where on the timeline that all worked out, but could you please first share with us this story from your dad?
Yeah. So the story was the story that I had grown up hearing, and he told me about how he lived next door to this, in my memory, it had been a koto musician, someone who played the koto, and he had lived next door to him, and I remembered him talking about how the day the man moved in, there was this huge concert grand piano that was being lifted into his house. And so he was like, I want to know that guy. So he became friends with him. And he asked him one day, oh, and my dad was also in a Beatles cover band, which in Japan is like pretty amazing. First of all, that he had a Beatles cover band. Second of all, that the name of the band was The Whispers, which if you speak Japanese, that's maybe like the hardest word to say in Japanese, so it would have been pronounced like the Whispasu.
I love that.
So he was in this Beatles cover band. He went over to this man's house, and he became friends with him, and he asked him one day, what is your favorite sound? And the man said, my favorite sound is the sound of wind through bamboo and the sound of silence. And you know, there's like, if we have time, we'll have to talk about that amazing spread that Julia has of the bamboo. Mm-hmm. But the moment of it being silence was so interesting. It had just kind of like lodged in my child's mind somewhere. And when I came to writing children's books, which was a very winding journey, when I came to writing them, it just popped into my mind that this was this story that I was really curious about. And it has such it's such an exciting thing to think, well, what is silence and how do we feel it in our bodies? And what is that to a little boy in Tokyo? And the concept of it was enough to get me really, really excited about it. And it was only later that then I found out, because I called my dad when we were coming up for a title for the book, and I called him and I said, like, hey, tell me the story again about the koto player. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like the koto player, you know, the story that I've built my childhood on. And he says, and I kind of reminded him, you know, the guy who loves silence. And he goes, oh, no, that wasn't a koto player. That was Toru Takemitsu, who then, of course, I start researching him and finding out that he wrote this book called Confronting Silence. Like when he said he loved silence, he was so all in about it. I mean, he really was devoted to this concept. And so it was really exciting to, you know, find this children's book that was explaining that concept in a way that kids could really like dig in and get that feeling, to like get deep into that story.
I think that it's really amazing to me the way you tapped into childhood and into this story that sort of got lodged into your being, and you just carried it with you, and it wouldn't leave you. And now I'm in love with the idea, when I talk to writers, that every once in a while you hear like this stories that just sort of you carry with them your whole life, and then suddenly they blossom into something that you need to write down, but that you can carry these ideas with you forever, and that sometimes they just present themselves that way, right? But to know then that it brought you back to your dad, and that you were learning new things by coming back to your memory is something really beautiful as well. I like that. And you're right, boy, that spread, Julia, that spread of the bamboo. Well, even I can't even limit it to that. You captured through illustration, and really I think more through composition in your illustration, setting up these sounds that we're taking in, the rain and the traffic and the crowds. There are so many scenes that you set up that were very evocative to me of sound, while being, you know, illustrations on a page. I really was in awe of your skill at doing that.
Oh, thank you.
Pipe in and say, what? It's such an incredible gift. It's such an incredible gift to have Julia doing this book. Like, it's such a dream, and just so totally incredible that she was the one who did the illustrations for the story.
Oh, well, so I've done, maybe this is my third children's book, and I've done some other specialty books, but I told Katrina from the start that this one felt different. And they're all kind of my children, but this one felt more like me, maybe in the style that I was allowed to do, because I'm pretty versatile as far as the, like, different images go, and I can make very cutesy stuff and very simplified things. And I never thought that I'd be able to use this type of line work in a children's book. I mean, it's more complex and intricate, and like I can pack a lot of details in there. And I usually think of it more as personal work or editorial stuff. So to be able to put this in a book where the book itself is like, you know, it's a complex idea. It's so beautiful and it's layered. Katrina's writing, like, I feel like I could keep reading the story throughout the years and keep getting something different from it. So to actually have writing that went along with the illustrations so well was a dream to me. Like, I really, really liked doing this book because it felt like kind of the product that had been waiting to happen. I just didn't have that other counterpart, like the writer who could write something that would actually feel something like the drawings there.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful that you experienced it that way. I find that your book looks very different from other books that I've seen in that you've got these two things going, I think, that make it work at the same time. Katrina, at the end, to have Yoshio come to the understanding that silence is there, it's present, but it's sort of in these in-between moments, right? It's in between the footsteps. It's in these moments while we're eating, and in these different moments here, brought me back into the illustration and seeing these silent moments, whereas I think intentionally on the start of the read, I'm meant to see sound everywhere. Mm. It's meant to look busy. That the traffic is meant to be noisy and feel congested. And yet, upon returning to the story, as Julia, I think, is saying as well, your complex text allows that second read-through to be a different experience, because we're reading through with a knowledge that we've gained from that first read, and one that I think we continue to practice. I mean, much like you mentioned in the back about meditation and about focusing and losing track of time, I feel that this book has given more to me with successive reads, because I am reading it differently. I'm paying attention differently.
I love that. I love that. It kind of, I remember feeling, it's kind of a Where's Waldo for silence, you know, that you can go back and be like, oh, where was it? It's on that page. What a great observation. What a lovely observation. I think that's so true in Julia's images. Like, oh, wait, there it is. See it.
Can we please get someone to go write an Amazon review right now, quoting your book as the Where's Waldo for silence? Or maybe someone could just put it on the book jacket when you do a paperback version or something. That's brilliant. I love it. Oi. The style, I know, Julia, I read that the primary work that you did was in pen, and then you added color on in Photoshop, but that line work, again, the symmetry that you draw, it is more editorial. I understand it that way, but I go back to that composition that I feel like the way you're allowing us to see, for me, I mean, to lay it all out on the table, there are so many things that are new experiences for me reading this book. This is a culture that I'm not aware of. I have not been to Tokyo. These are sites that I've not seen before. All of my references are drawn from what, you know, like television has shown me, how movies or what have you have depicted, which are not fair assessments at all. But in the way that you both so carefully created this story, I feel like it allows also for the reader, whether it be a my age reader or a young child, to also understand a different place and a different experience and connect it to our own personal experience.
Oh, yeah. Actually, there are a lot of Easter eggs in there that are pretty adult type references, like things that kids definitely wouldn't get.
Yeah.
I wonder if you found any of them.
I found a couple. And then I noticed that you, in your, well, I'm flipping to the artist note, that you said that you talked about Taipei. However it was, you said that you added in some things that are, I drew on, I don't even know where it says. I should have had it like highlighted before I did it. But you just mentioned about dropping things in there that were interests of your own or memories of your own from when you visited Tokyo. And I immediately, the thing that was, that's always the connection for me, is when I saw Totoro.
Yeah.
anything in me, perhaps that's where I've gotten any of my education at all about, and this is again, not fair to put so much pressure on Miyazaki, but so much of what he has shown me through his art and storytelling style and the people he works with have I feel like been an education for me to some way. And so, yeah, seeing Totoro was something very special for me.
No, yeah, that's what I was hoping for. I mean, I've only gone to Tokyo twice and in another area of Japan once. So it's not like I lived there the way that Katrina did, but I grew up watching all of the Miyazaki movies, and you know, they've got this like weird Euro-Japanese mix, but they do cover a lot of different areas of Japanese culture. And I think that's the kind of gateway for a lot of people to seeing what you know, Japanese culture could have been like before, what it's like now. And I mean, if anything, he's so beloved, like all of his films, I think when I bring them up to anyone, everyone instantly goes like, oh, I love those films. Like there's such a strong emotional connection to Totoro and to many of the other characters that he made.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like we could make this the Miyazaki cast right now. Like, I'm ready. I'm ready
like
and primed
fan
to go.
Podcast.
I'm ready for it.
Yeah, or let's just get Miyazaki to, you know, turn it into a film. Julia,
that would be amazing.
Start back from retirement to work with
I would be done with life after that. Everything would be complete.
Well, and is it his? We're now I'm really nerding out. I was gonna say, I think it's his son that is doing a series on Amazon.
Yeah, but, I saw that.
Yeah, which is not the same because it's computer animated. Right. It's not hand drawn the way, but it's still great. Still has the feel of the storyteller. But Katrina, I do want to tap into that you have spent some time in Tokyo. Did you grow up there? Have you, why am I trying to guess? Katrina, could you tell me about Tokyo and your connection?
Well, you know, it's funny because I didn't live there as a child. We didn't have a lot of money growing up and it was really expensive to go to Japan. So my experiences in Japan as a child were very few. The thing that was really incredible to me is that my dad is an immigrant coming from Japan. Something really interesting happens, I think, in that the Tokyo that he remembered and the Tokyo that he would tell us stories of was this Tokyo from another time. And it's like it all froze, you know? His version of Tokyo kind of froze in the moment that he left it.
And so just interesting to me that one generation ago feels that different, but I get it.
It does. I mean, it's interesting because I think my dad also came from a very traditional family and his mother died when he was 13. And so his really good memories are also of childhood. So in the 50s. And it's something, there are so many moments in this book where I feel like Julia Kuo and I have like a psychic connection because I feel like she understood things about this book that we never talked about, even though we met during and were in touch a lot during the making of the book. There are moments that I feel like she is understanding this mythical Japan and creating this mythical Japan that I thought only existed in my imagination. Like somebody said that she uses the colors of vintage toys. And there's something about the sort of advance of those colors, the way that it like desaturates through the end. There's something about it that's capturing this like mythical other kind of Japan that isn't even the Japan, you know, it's not the Japan of like a documentary or of the news or even of certain films. There's something about it that feels really true to my dad's experience and then really true to the Japan that I kind of wanted to find when I lived there as an adult. So I moved there as an adult and was working as a TV reporter and kind of experiencing it for the first time and figuring out like, oh, that's why my dad's so weird in this way. Or, you know, kind of really having this Japanese experience. And I found that what I was looking for is I was looking for those places for my dad's stories. And I was looking for, you know, the sound of the pebbles in his favorite shrine and all of these little details that are maybe a bit more timeless, you know, that are less the like pachinko. Well, actually, pachinko, I think, also figured into my dad's story, but less the sort of, I don't know, I guess it's this mix of the modern and historic that's so moving to me and that I think Julia, you know, captures so beautifully in the book. Like, I feel like it's like an emotional heart of Japan that somehow she got and understood. Mm. And Julia, like, we've talked too about the immigrant experience and that there's something there, I think, as well.
Yeah, being a second generation, you know, hyphenated American and having this like other culture that's your secret identity that you always, you know, it's always floating in the background and a part of who you are and how you're living your life here. It's nice to be able to really embrace that as an adult and to like recognize how big a deal that is, you know, to go to this completely different country and feel like there's some type of ownership there, that you belong in some way, maybe not completely, but there is like vested identity.
That's something that that fascinates me as you're saying it, Julia, that idea that you're able to go to another country and because a family member was from there, it's almost as if in your DNA is speaking to a part of this, you know, a belonging to this other place that could be completely foreign to you. That That's amazing. That's awesome. I have chills listening. I love that. Then you pour that. I mean, that there's like a love there. There's a beautiful quality to that sentiment that you pour that into your art and into your words that you both do. That, I mean, if ever trying to dissect why this book works, I feel like it's probably because you both care so much and you are honoring and respecting the content, the way, Katrina, that you, there's nothing funny or criticizing or joking toward the child in this story to in any way. I'll say it the other way. This book respects the child from beginning to end. So much so that we can even see Yoshio at the end, as you were saying, with the color sort of fading out of the art. Really the surroundings, everything sort of fades away from him until he's just at this desk alone, surrounded by that white space of the page. And it just, I don't know, there's just so much there that is respecting that child. It's just, it's something that I don't think you can fake. I think that that you're tapping into something that really means something to you, and that allows it to be imbued with meaning for us.
I mean, that's so meaningful to me. That's so, I mean, it really like makes me kind of tear up, because I think when I think about my experience of being a child and of having this connection with this inner stillness and this inner wonder about the world, and I think about how serious, I was really serious as a kid. I'm serious about the world and so endlessly interested in how things work, you know, earthworms in the ground, or like stacking quarters, or just these little moments that were so where time stretches out in this really incredible way. And it's something that I'm really afraid is disappearing. I'm afraid that it's not an experience that, you know, that we need to protect that experience for kids.
I think, you know, the quiet, I'm sorry, Julia, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to add one thing. You've kind of referenced the color going away and it getting quieter and stiller. And I think that there's a third person who also helped to make that happen. And that's our editor, Bethany Strout. And I'm pretty sure the book wouldn't be what it is now without her. So I just want to give credit to where it's due. I think she really understood what the book was from the beginning, even before I was on board too. And it's due to her genius that it kind of became the final piece that it was. Sorry, I just had to get that out there.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. The number of people that it takes, because so Alvina Ling worked on the manuscript, and so she was.
Oh, I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah. Oh, so. Lovely. Then Bethany took over from Alvina, and then worked with Julia on the illustrations. And I mean, it was an absolute dream. Like, it really just. I felt like I was in a master class all the time, like learning how to be a better writer and learning how to tell a more concise, you know, heartfelt story.
From where I was just going to remark about the silence, I see that, Katrina, the way that it feels, at least from when I was a child, if I'm drawing just from my own experience, it feels like there's so much more competing for a child's attention now, and even now I have sirens even for competing for my attention as an adult, that I have really found a lot of peace and a chance to recenter by doing daily meditation. And it surprises me about how sort of disconnected I realize I am once I reconnect that way, even in that way of like reconnecting with myself, hearing myself, knowing my awareness of my body and where I am. So I'm with you on that. But then to take it back to these other people that are seeing that idea, that are connecting with that idea, this book that you've done, all these great people at Little Brown that made it happen. Katrina, did you have the opportunity to express any interest in any artists or art styles that you were picturing for this book? Mm-hmm. Or is that something that was fully... is it Bethany, did you say?
Yeah, so...
In Bethany's sense.
I guess it was Elvina when we were choosing Elvina.
Okay, okay.
And that was such a cool... I mean, I feel like I really lucked out because I know this... You know, it's rare that illustrators and authors get to meet each other, and it's rare that authors are given... You know, I mean, I just felt like they were really interested in what I liked and really respectful of the things that I wanted in the book. And I saw Julia's, they had given me a list of people and Julia was on it. And I saw her 100 Days in Cleveland series, which is a really gorgeous series where the city kind of has these like bursts of color and then it kind of dissolves into sketch on the outside. And I loved that piece so much because Tokyo is like a character in the book. And I thought this woman really knows cities. Like she really knows cities. Mm-hmm. And that was, so we had a lot of discussions about it. And Julia was, you know, the person that both Elvina and I thought would be great. And it was just so exciting when she sent in this super beautiful, what do you call it, Julia? Like a sample?
Yeah. Sample image.
And it was of that last moment when he finds silence, which I thought was so daring, right?
the desk surrounded by people, that one?
I didn't realize it was gutsy.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it's like the moment he finds it in the book. So it was in the classroom. And it's not exactly, but it was so, it felt so right. It felt so right. And I think we were all just super excited that she was into the project
Julia, it was really cool. Julia, mm-hmm. Can I ask you sort of a technical-ish question?
Yeah.
On your end, what was the process like for you to become connected to this book? Like when they, if you don't mind sharing, when they reach out to you and what sort of how many work samples or what kind of work samples you had to share. I that's not something I get a chance to ask people very often. I'd love to know.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. So it always comes to me through my amazing edit agent, Emily Van Beek. So she came to me saying like, oh, the folks at Little Brown have this manuscript and they're interested in you, but I think they'd like to see a sample first. So usually it's just one sample and the terms of that can vary. But I think at this point in the process, it sounded like they knew they wanted to work with me. They just had to see it. So then I made that one sample. And from then, I think we, you know, signed on pretty quickly. Okay. I don't think that there was much in the way of that between the sample and actually just starting on the book. It does vary from book to book. Sometimes it's really unsure. Like you might be kind of making a sample at the same time as three or four other illustrators, and maybe the writer is choosing, or maybe the agent is, or actually just the writer. But for this one, it felt more certain than others.
Yes. And then how then did the editors, how did Elvina have your work? How do people become aware of you? Other than, I know the experience after talking to a couple art directors of having postcards out, having, you know, your online presence and them just sort of keeping track of people. But how do they know you?
Yeah, well, this isn't going to be very helpful to people, but Alvina is the reason that I'm doing books, period. I think I told her this recently, but I did my very first children's chapter book. It was a book written by Jenny Hunt. It's called Claire Lee and the Apple Pie Dream. I did that in maybe 2010. And that was through a friend of a friend who knew Alvina. I think maybe the illustrator on that book had backed out and they needed to find someone. So my name came up. I worked on that book. And that's how I got connected to the Little Brown family. And that's how I met my agent, Emily. So I think ever since then, I had kind of been in the back of their minds. I, you know, had this ongoing relationship with them. And I knew that Emily and Alvina like knew each other as well. So I think it's more like I was already kind of in touch rather than just like picking me up, like picking my postcard up out of a stack or something like that.
Well, I mean, there is that entry point, though. To give you credit, they not only liked your work initially, but you continued to show them that you can show up and do a great job. So they wanted to, I mean, you were on their minds.
Yeah, you're giving me too much credit.
come on now. Okay, let me, just to continue making you feel uncomfortable with credit, I want to say one last thing, just because I think Katrina and I both are in the Julia fan club. But one of the things I admire about your work the most in this book, and one of the things I think that make it stand out so much, is that much like, and I'm glad that Katrina, you brought up the 100 Days of Cleveland thing, because what I notice from this book, and even just from a picture walk, from flipping through the pages quickly, is that every scene is so varied that you don't waste a moment of the real estate you have in between the covers. And I think that that's a sign of a really great storyteller, that you are pulling in close to your characters when we need to see them, but you're also trying to show us as much of that world. I mean, as Katrina said about Tokyo being a character in the story, and indeed Tokyo, she is a character in the story. But that wouldn't have been conveyed as effectively as it was if you hadn't made the choice to show such varied settings. And also, can we talk for a moment about the dinner scene where you have this beautiful square on the left-hand side and a beautiful circle from the bath on the right. I just think that composition is one of my favorites. Well, everyone is my favorite. Well, I'm not going to lie. Yours is a book that I would buy like 3 copies and then just disassemble all of the books and just lay them all out and frame them and have like a wall.
Yes.
Just cut them out.
Right, Katrina? Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah.
When you get a book that makes you want to destroy the book and have it like on your wall, I'm telling you, those are really rare. But it's a testament to the capital A art that's in this book. It's beautiful work, and I'm really glad that the two of you not only got to come together to make a book, but that to find out that now you are actually connected, talking. That's the world's a better place because of that.
Oh, and they have an original. Sketch. She gave me a sketch from the bamboo page. Oh, the original sketch.
Beautiful, beautiful.
You know, it took me a while to figure out like what to do with the book, and you know, to start putting in things that I liked, and you know, like the little vendor stands, things that I identified with too. And I wish I had thought of it earlier. So it wasn't until the very end that I was like, oh, I should draw people that I know into this book. And I only got in like maybe 1.5 or 2.5 people, but one of them is Katrina. So she's
and my son.
And Taiga on the back of the cover. Yeah. But they're kind of hidden, so it literally is a Where's Waldo kind of experience.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Well, as we wrap up our conversation, one, I'm so grateful that you both came on, but two, this beautiful connection that you have, I never take for granted the way that connections continue to pay forward. And I'll leave you both with this, that I look forward to what the future together brings you both, because I feel like the world's not done with you both as a team. So I'll look forward to whatever that may mean. But I want to tell you, Katrina, thank you for your beautiful words and for the space that you give us to hear the silence. And thank you, Julia, for your beautiful compositions and for the silence that we can see in the noise. This is such a gorgeous book, and I really am touched by getting to read it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having these beautiful conversations. It's really just such a treat for us to get all this love from you.
I know.
Really, you know, and the work that you're doing with children and giving them these like love confetti bombs of like, here are all of the things that you need to read and love, is just, you're a gift. We're really glad that you exist and are doing the work you do.
You're very kind. I promise you, though, that I am only one of many, many, many people. I just happen to be vocal because I have a podcast. So I hope that...
definitely. There are many amazing librarians.
I hope
but we're talking to you.
I hope. Well, you're very sweet. I value you and I appreciate you. And I'm blushing because I like this. It's very nice. Also, as in the experience that I went through reading this book and seeing new places, I wish for you both that as you are out doing school visits, as I know you are already, I'm sure, and will continue to do so, that that all sorts of different children get to have the experience that I did, where they get to experience something new, something unfamiliar, and yet something with that through line of silence being universal. So on that note, I'm going to bring you back to the children and ask you, Katrina, first, that I'll see this library full of children tomorrow as we talked about. What message, if I can bring a message to them from you, what could I share?
I mean, I think the secret is that no matter how noisy the world is, that you can always find silence inside of you.
Oh, I like that. Julia, mm-hmm. I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. What message can I bring to them from you?
I would say to try to look for books that you love so much that you want to live in them, because those are always my favorite.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. And Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Chris Van Dusen shares Hattie and Hudson, a beautiful picture book about a sea monster and a girl who sings. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.